My name is Peter Warwick.
I'm known as Stephen Lishman.
My name is Yvette Page.
37 years old now.
Scott Gillian O'Leary.
25 years old. O'Leary.
My age is 39.
I'm a writer. 18.
I work for temporary agency. And I work
for the
Bush.
I'm 14.
I'm 42.
I'm 48 years old.
46.
I live abroad. I'm suffering in a section.
I was 14 when I first started. Good out with blokes.
I liked my teacher in school when I was 6.
14 year old.
I've always known.
And it's gone on.
I came out when I was 13.
But I didn't understand it.
Right up to now.
Just when I started to get those feelings at around about,
for
I
me,
suppose it was
okay.
Like 9 years old.
Well, fancying female teachers when you're in primary school.
Fell in love with Val from Scooby-Doo when I was 5.
I suppose...
Forgotten
once
how much
got
I fancied Robin when I was about 13.
Like the age of maybe 11 or 12.
For me, it was quite
like that.
Confusing.
Maybe starting to
think
that, you felt slightly differently.
I was always a very effeminate child.
I don't think I recognised anything till
so there were always, right from a very, very early age...
pregnant with my first
questions
child.
Asked and comments made.
And I didn't do anything about it until I was pregnant with my second child.
From as far back as I can ever remember.
I was very aware of it.
I wanted to impress the female.
I was first aware of my sexuality at the age of about...
I just remember seeing pictures.
8 or 10.
Finding your dad's pornos and stuff.
But I knew I was gay.
But I was looking at the men, not the women. It was...
felt weird. I mean, but it didn't feel wrong, which is why I felt good about it. I thought...
I think I realised...
Well, I'm not freaking out, so... And, I just...
So I think it's a sort of process you move into.
I can remember then not wanting to admit it to myself.
I didn't really get to grips with it until I was a bit older.
You get stuck.
I was never scared of it. I kind of embraced it.
I'm not normal.
I really enjoyed it because it's great.
I never had
it.
What's normal anyway?
I am what I am, and I'm very proud of that.
I suppose it's like, what's a straight line? I was like it to have a bend in it.
School was bad.
School
public
school
was
just
away,
I was buggered by
weird.
One guy from day one.
Once not a lot of people. It was out at school that I was gay. It was horrendous.
It absolutely
so many giants.
Queen.
Queen.
Thumbs against the
baggage.
Walking down the corridor. It's like I was in a
meeting.
We could walk down the corridor. The corridor would actually open up. As we walked along. No one wanted to touch me.
If you don't conform to normality, you're an outcast.
Because we were the top form, my form got chose to do a yearbook. It was a trial. It came to signing day where you got to sign everyone's books. And for some weird reason, I'd actually got really excited about it. And I know it was quite stereotypical being a goth and everything, but I was quite depressed and I was self-harming. So people knew I was. So it was like, oh yeah, he's a freak, he slits his wrists. And I wish I hadn't got myself hyped up about it because someone had brought a knife to school and decided they were going to throw a knife at me. So they threw a knife at me and said, oh, Scott, you're going to slit your wrists. You're going to sign a book with your blood. Go on, please. My face got burnt off every photo in everyone's book. And when I started shouting at them, the teacher had a go at me for swearing.
For people at school, I think if they actually, they come out or it's known they're gay at school... it can be horrendous. It's like bullying. And I mean, it's not surprising some people do stupid things because when you get that much pressure and that much bullying...
I would never never advise anyone to come out when you're at secondary school.
Because I wanted to learn as well. I really enjoyed school.
I came out when I was 13.
But I did start not to show interest.
I was not working at all well.
By the time my GCSEs came around, I was just bored with it all.
My grades suffered a lot. I was downgraded.
I was sick of all these small-minded kids and they were doing my head in. So I did leave after...
I was very much sent to Coventry.
They made it hard, very hard, yeah.
I used to have faggot written on my clothes. I'd be sitting in a lesson, and the way the tables were is that someone was sitting directly behind you, and they would lean over and write, they'd do it gradually. And I'd ask to move, and the teacher was like, stop complaining. And she didn't do anything about it. I had faggot written over every book I had, pages ripped out, so I'd have to do all my work over again. No one ever got in trouble for this, ever. And there was my art teacher was really cool about it though, proper hippie. So he was really cool. Anyone ever gave me shit when he was around, and he went ballistic at him. But if he ever went to the head teacher, nothing ever got done. So they said either you can go in solitary confinement, which was actually a punishment at my school. If you were, solitary confinement was one of the worst punishments we had at my school. But they said, oh, you could go in solitary confinement to get away from everyone. School wasn't very nice at all.
Because it was a very opening day in my sixth form at school. And somebody asked me across the classroom if I was gay, trying to make a joke about it. But I just went, yeah, and what's your problem? So, you know, and the teacher didn't encourage that talk in class.
I'd had it instilled into me by my parents and everyone else that I loved and respected, tell the truth. And of course, at 13, I did tell the truth, and nobody else seemed to be able to deal with it.
If you get that acceptance, I think it would be a lot easier. I really do. And I think that's got to start from a young age where people are aware, and I firmly believe that this should be mentioned in school when they're teaching sex education. I'm sorry.
When sex education came about,
I stood up. I made a downright statement about doing it. I
stood up in the middle of class and said, well, I'm a lesbian, so what can you tell me about
sex? Is it different for gay men? And he said, can you stop mucking around, please?
I can't.
And like, can you stop mucking around, please?
Put me in the right direction or something. He said, I can't say anything
to know about gay sex.
I think one of the biggest failings in our education system is that actually if somebody's sexuality were seen as a positive thing and were nurtured in the appropriate way, then people might grow up in a situation where they didn't feel the need to go around in drafty parks at midnight with absolutely no one in their lives knowing where they are, because they sure as hell ain't going to tell their mum, and putting themselves at that kind of risk. You know, it wouldn't happen were they nurtured appropriately. The local gay community...
I remember the first gay pub I went to.
...centred around one...
My first point of contact place. When I was 18.
The Princess Royal of Wellingborough Road.
The Club Royal.
The Princess Royal
on Wellingborough Road.
That was the main Wellingborough
Road. Oh, thank God for that place. That's all I can say.
A front door on the corner onto the street.
1976.
I was
14.
15, I think. I don't know how we got in. Because we must both look like kids.
And you walked in there and they think... You're in the wrong place, love. You go around the side
come out
door.
Of the pub and go round the back.
You know,
and knock
twice and
the
shutter on the door, kind of coming back, and this very austere-looking man appear through the grate at you, and it was like...
You know, say the password.
Like joining the Masons.
It was all just like a bit hidden away, and I guess that's kind of reflection of the times.
And you have to climb up some tiny little back steps.
Black walls
and a liberal use of mirrors.
Forgive me, it was quite seedy. It was really a strange place.
When I first went there, it was run by a fabulous woman called Ruby.
And she had what models would crave for, but she had these kind of cubit lips.
And if you didn't know that Ruby was a woman, you would have sworn she was a drag queen. I mean,
and she had this little cocktail bar in the corner of this bar, and it really was a 50s little cocktail bar. And she called all the men her boys. And she was a and she had this really strange, tall husband that nobody could work out actually if it was a husband or a son.
But she was so right, because that's how it was. It was only because she was completely bizarre that she fitted in so what gay men loved her. And it was like she'd found a home as well. She wasn't a lesbian, she was a straight woman. But because she was so eccentric, she kind of found a home with all the other eccentrics, because that's how it was then, you know. The things that we had to do, I mean, it was
really
just
weird.
I mean, looking back, it was completely ridiculous.
I think it must be sort of
and there used to be these awful
you had to have a meal, I think, when you went in,
you were given a
cornfield club or have a late life.
And halfway through the evening, very odd stop. And they would say, supper is served. And you would have to go and get this side plate that had this curled up spam, a kind of almost liquid piece of lettuce, and a tomato that now would be called a sun-dried tomato. And that was to get the supper licence, you know, so she could run the club until 2 o'clock in the morning. Well, that always went down the lavatory. And we always knew that the newcomers, because it was they that would eat the food off the side plate, so all us guys and all the girls would look intently who was actually eating the supper. Do you know what I mean? But it was vile. But the atmosphere was tremendous.
I mean, the feeling of walking into that grotty class
was the most liberating experience. Yes, it was lovely going in and out of there.
Because it was really about safety.
Meeting people.
If you wanted to hug a man or kiss a man or hold a man's hand, you could do it.
It was brilliant camaraderie.
And there was a real sense of
camaraderie. It was a very enjoyable and very happy place.
The PR changed over the time. Investment seemed to stop going into over the next 10 years,
probably
somebody took it over and it eventually stopped being a gay
pub. The pub is still there, but it's gone through many changes.
Jekyll and Hyde, I think it's
called. We were very lucky to have the venue, the Princess Royal, all those years ago. And then various venues started to open.
Manhattan
They left with the Jolly and the Boston Clipper. It always seems that if one place goes, another one opens. There's never been without, I don't think, since I've been in Northampton, there's never been without a gay club or a gay scene. The gay scene in general, anywhere, I think it's very manipulative if you don't know anything about it. And I think that is the big, big problem, because it is still shut away, because we are still scared of bashings or homophobic attacks or whatever, you know. So we don't open it out, but I think it needs to be open. People need to see it so people are aware of what goes on. Because it definitely, not scarred me, but it definitely had some effect on my life. The way, if I knew so much more about it, I would have been such more cautious. I find myself a lot more cautious now because of what I've been through, from coming out and getting pulled into it all. But I suppose that's part of discovery as well, discovering who you are. But it was very strange. It was the sex side more than anything. Totally. Because it sounds really naive at 15, 16, you think you should know about sex and what goes on. And on the gay scene, I suppose it's just the same, really. But it was so promiscuous. And to me, you went out on the weekend and you pulled somebody. And that sounds awful now. And, you know, a lot of gay men will admit to it, a lot of gay men won't, even though they do. That's still quite funny. Whereas I'm very open about sex now and everything, but people still hide away from it. But it's very promiscuous, and people talk about it, people don't. People lurk in dark corners. It happens in clubs, you know, and that seems to be very accepting. But I think that's what makes it more promiscuous. And when I was like 16, 17, 18, for me, because it was an acceptance, somebody liked me for who I was, somebody liked me for being gay, being a young boy, whatever. And some people were very genuine. And you latch on to it, I think. But some people do, I think they take advantage. Because you don't know. Well, they did. Because I didn't know what was going on. To a degree. I didn't understand it, you know. That I could be who I wanted and I didn't have to give myself over. But because I wanted to be accepted, I did it. You know, here I am, somebody come and get me. And they did. I don't know if that is a youthful thing, because I've had no straight experiences, so I don't know if that's just a youthful thing or if it's a gay thing. I really don't know. But it feels like it's a gay thing. You know, and yeah, straight people are promiscuous and things, but I just don't know. It just seems so much more in your face. Because I've worked in straight clubs and you don't see it. It's, you know, you don't go to the toilets and someone's having sex in the cubicle. You know, on the odd occasion, if you're on a club 18 to 30 holiday, but that's a different story. But it's there, it's all around you. And so many people are not safe. So many people are not safe as well. And that's weird. I find that very bizarre. Because, you know, I think people just see the condom as a way to stop you having a baby. And that's it, that's all it's good for. I really do. And because you're gay, you don't need one because you can't get pregnant. I swear to God, I think that's what people think. I really do.
You talk to the youth of today, and they are very flippant about HIV and AIDS.
In HIV education in school, we didn't get any. It was just like, you have to use a condom because, you know, you could get infected with this, this, this and this. There was no emphasis
the
or
anything. They didn't want to talk about it. So
they were scared, though. They were scared to talk about like anything like that.
And I really do think that it's very sad that gay society is based on hedonism and the body beautiful. And unfortunately, AIDS has the crippling effect of people losing weight and various other signs. And yet, if you go within gay society to a club or whatever, you're still ostracised by your own kind?
Because I'm slim, and always have been slim. I got a lot of prejudice from gay men. Can I say that I am? Because I am HIV positive. But you would get comments openly, as if I wasn't there. Oh, don't go near her. She's got the skinny disease and things like that.
And yet those people probably wouldn't be practising safe sex either, would they?
No.
I was suspected of HIV. And when I went down the clinic for a second time, they said, no, we've made a mistake. But, I mean, okay, they made the mistake. But I could still go down and get blood tests. But it makes you really wonder. When they first told me I was suspected of it, and it sinks in, first thing you want to do is put yourself in the river, do something to yourself. When they told me, I came out of the house and walked down to the river, and I stood on that side of that river for about an hour and a half, and I was still with the neckline. Phil came down, him and another guy, and they got hold of me. Oh, they got in. No doubt about it. Just plays your mind up. And you don't want to speak to anybody. Phil got up behind me and says, come away. I said, I'm not going in there. He said, you were. He said, we were watching you for at least 10 minutes. But it gets you. They turn around and say, well, you've got AIDS, like, you know. Cool, Christ. I mean, and they don't go the easy way around telling you. They just say, do you want the bad news or the good news? Turn around and say, you've got HIV, like, you know. And you get up and you walk out. You do, honestly, you just get up and walk out of the place. And one of the nurses will walk with you, like, you know, and they say, oh, we want you to sign the paper to say you walked out. And we used to go down the hospital twice a month for lectures. Go in there, just up the road, they have a clinic on the corner of the road there. Just go in there. We all used to sit around and talk to you, like, you know, doctors are coming in there, but yatter and natter to you, nurses. And it was brilliant. And it just takes, I can just describe it, takes that feeling off you. That they'll have to turn around and say, well, you were suspected of it. But they still keep a check on you. They tell your own doctor, or they write a letter and tell them. And they keep records on it. But I've always said, touch wood, I'm bloody lucky I've got away with it so easy. But there's a lot that haven't got away with it.
Because at the time when I was diagnosed, it was 1986, and there were no drugs or anything. So when they told me, and I wasn't promiscuous, that's what got on my bloody
nerves. Yeah.
When they told me, they almost told me, so get your house in order kind of thing, like prepare for the worst. So,
and it was around about the time of those adverts with the,
oh God, I used to hate that. And
everything was doom and gloom.
Yeah.
We didn't understand about even the difference between HIV and AIDS, and I think it was difficult to try and get our heads around it ourselves, even to try and start to explain it to anybody else.
Mm. And even at the hospital, there was nowhere for you. They told you. And I sat in the nurse's station to be counselled. Well, it was a cup of tea and hopefully we'll see you in next week kind of thing. But again, that's changed so much now. You had to listen to people who would say, oh, people with AIDS, I ought to put them on an island and or shoot them or do something with them. And, you know, it's God's way of, well, there are enough diseases in the world for God not to invent another one.
It was a frightening time, I think.
Yeah, I've been into hospital a couple of times and they've given me separate loos. And even recently I went into hospital for a minor op. I always tell them, I mean, they know, but I told them that I was HIV positive. And they said, yes, we know, blah, blah, blah. But because we know you are, you're going to be last done on the day. That's why. You're going to use an oily rag or something. You know? And it's just, that's the medical community, she said, the nurse told me. So, so that's strange. Even nowadays, I mean, that was only, what, about 6 months ago?
I had a friend who was HIV positive, and people did find out. He's had people come up to him and say, you're dirty, you're infected, don't come near me. Stupid things like sharing a cheeseburger or drinking a drink with them, they are so uneducated about it. My mate, he's had so many people fall out with him over it. It scares him, really does scare him. And it really upsets him because a lot of people presume he's got AIDS as well. So he's forever having people saying, oh, have you got AIDS? Have you got AIDS? And stuff like that. And it really, really fucks his head up really badly. There's groups he can go to and stuff, but he don't want to go because it's not how he'd like to deal with it. He'd rather people would be more, you wouldn't need to go to a group because people would be more educated, that you wouldn't have anyone being prejudiced about it.
For me personally, I suppose during the kind of emergence of AIDS and that period, being in a straight relationship meant that I was kind of not directly touched by it in that way. And being in a monogamous relationship as well, it didn't have an impact. Yeah, I mean, it was odd really, because I had that kind of brief sexual encounter at the age of 17 with a guy, and then left school, went through university and into work, and didn't have any other sort of relations at all. And then when I was about 21 or 22, I actually started dating a girl that I'd knew through work, and we actually ended up getting married, and I was married for nearly 10 years. So if you like, a complete change, really.
I could say it didn't occur to me to consider anything other than heterosexuality, family, children. That's what I grew up believing was what my ambitions were. So that's where I ended up for a while.
I suppose I feel that there was quite a bit of pressure from childhood and growing up that the kind of accepted and assumed thing to do was to get married and have children. But it isn't something that I suddenly sort of woke up and thought, oh, this is something I need to do. It was the natural and right thing to do at the time.
And I think, like most people who are married and have identified as heterosexual, you make a journey. And I think I got there slowly over the time from about the age of 27. It was just a progression from being fairly comfortable as a heterosexual to being not a heterosexual at all.
I met my ex-wife and we got on very, very well. We still do get on very well. And the reason that we split was because I actually met somebody else. I met another guy, and that started to make me think about my real feelings and feelings that I had for my ex-wife. And in the end, it got to a point where I decided that the best thing for me and for Lynn was for us to separate and me to leave, which is what happened in the end.
I remember when I told my husband that I was having these thoughts about women, and bless his cotton socks, he told me that the thing to do was to go and find out about this, and he said, go sort out, which I think was very helpful and supportive. And I can't criticise him for the support that he gave me at that time. It's brilliant. It's not what you expect from a husband. It was bloody good. It became more difficult later on became more difficult when the impact of where I was going affected his life. Whilst I was still exploring things and not threatening the family environment, that was comfortable, but more difficult later on. And at that time, there were no cases in which lesbians got custody and control of children in contested cases. And it was clear that that would become an issue if pushed. So, didn't push it.
We had a daughter as well, Emily. She's obviously completely aware and completely seems to be completely accepting. She must be accepting because she actually introduces me and us as a couple to her school friends, her close friends, which I think is a good step because I think it's possible to be accepting of a gay parent in your own right, but to actually kind of take that to school is quite an important step. I suppose for her it can be difficult because if she, I don't know, if you talk to school friends and you talk about your home life and relationships and all the rest of it, and I suppose for her to tell her school friends that, you know, she lives with her mum who's got a new partner and her dad's got a partner but it happens to be a man, that must be potentially quite difficult. And I think Emily's very careful about who she tells that to or who she brings into that kind of relationship. So one or two of her close friends she'll do that with. And so if she comes over and we're going out or something, she'll sometimes say, can so-and-so friend come along? And then they obviously see us and are aware of it. I think she's obviously worked out for herself that when she should do that and when perhaps she shouldn't do that.
I know my daughter got some jip at school, and I know that because I suppose she's always felt more comfortable to talk to me about these things. My son has never felt comfortable to talk to me about things that are emotional in any context. I think that's just his characteristic. It's not something he's ever learned how to do. And therefore, I've not had much of a conversation with my son at all about it. At my daughter's 21st party, she referred to her three mothers, stepmother, myself, my partner. And that was really nice. That really made me proud of where she was in herself. We've maintained, I think, a good relationship. But there's times when I feel more like a best aunt than a mother.
We've sat and discussed. We have discussed sexuality. I mean, we're not kind of scared of those conversations. We've had those kind of frank conversations, which I think is important. And again, that's not at my kind of behest, but hers, which I think is how it should be. I wouldn't kind of force her to be accepting or force my sexuality onto her, but it's nice that she felt when she wanted to ask questions she was able to, and we could sit down and talk about things. And as I say, I think that's due to the fact that I've been able to maintain a good relationship with her, and her mother has, and her mother's been accepting of my position. That obviously helps because she's not been in an environment where she's hearing one thing from one parent and another from me. So I've been very lucky in that respect. Yeah, and I think at having got to 15, I think we've perhaps got over what could have been a difficult time for her, I suppose, with everybody going through puberty and all the rest of it. She's still only 15, she's still only very young, but she's quite kind of aware, I suppose, which is good.
Okay, my son, Farrell, he's always been open about us. Even at nursery, he was open about us. The kids all at school at that age
no.
don't know anything. They don't even see you.
Not in nursery.
But over the last few years, where he's got that bit older, he's 9 now, he has been picked on. And he has also, it's come to, but it's just a general bully at school. So in other words, anyone different gets picked on. He did say a few days ago, when we were having a row, that people at school say two ladies shouldn't be together. I said, well, we've had that discussion before, haven't we? I don't care what people think at school. I only care what you think and what we think. Other people, they've got their own opinions, Farrell, and it's up to them. But why are you worried about it? I thought you weren't worried about what people think at school. I'm just saying what they say. I said, well, what do you think? He said, well, I'm happy. I said, well, that's not a problem then, is it? So it's always going to go through his mind. He's always going to get it.
being gay or straight doesn't make you a good parent. Being a good parent makes you a good parent. And I know plenty of people, gay and straight, that are good parents, and plenty, not so many, I suppose, but that aren't as good. I don't think it's something that that sexuality has any bearing on whatsoever. It's about the parents and how good they are at being parents that's going to be important to the child, I suppose, and the way that you raise a child and the values that you try and instill in them, I think, is what makes them the person they are. And I actually think that, some children, particularly perhaps if they're not sure of their sexuality themselves, can be better off in that environment anyway, where at least it's accepted, than in an environment where their sexuality isn't going to be.
Well, I know it would have to be a perfect world, but just say we did live in a perfect world and things could change.
Things
how should
there
things
are
change?
Times in which get rid I would of all like small-minded.
The gay culture in Northampton needs an infusion of like culture.
There's nothing
a safe place for everybody.
I don't think Northampton would be able to cope with that.
Well, hopefully it will, but certainly not at the moment.
Because Northampton isn't that accepting.
People have to live their whole life.
And it'll go from anything. It'll go from abuse across the road. People shouting comments like the school ground bullying to getting beaten up to people being killed. You have everything in Northampton. We've had everything.
I think it's come a hell of a long way, and yet it's like saying, you know, you've got 20 miles to go, and you go that 20 miles, and somebody tells you, well, actually, we fibbed, it's 220 miles you've got to go, so it's the road is a lot longer than I imagined, and we're nowhere near the end of that road.